Wintrust Business Lunch is rolling. Thanks for joining us. This is John Williams. Pete Zimmerman produces, and on Mondays, we usually come out of the gate with Elise Glink, and this is no exception. Hi, Elise.
Hi, John. How are you?
Pretty good. You know, when I went about this weekend, I hope you had a good weekend, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Lovely weather. Nice and warm, sunny. Graduation time.
Oh, yeah.
All good.
Oh, did you go to a graduation ceremony?
I did. My younger son, class of 2020, finally had his graduation over at Northwestern.
What a tough year to be a student, huh?
I'll say the last year and a half have just been awful. Yeah. Kudos to all the kids who have pulled through.
Yeah, no kidding. And the moms and dads as well. You know, when you do go about over the weekend, though, I noticed almost everywhere I went, like to a Jiffy Lube, to a bar, to a restaurant, signs up saying help wanted. One of them said, help wanted, we mean right now. You know, not that we aren't just like taking resumes. We need you to start tomorrow was the essence of the sign. It's interesting, isn't it, how many unfilled jobs that are out there, and yet unemployment is still high.
Yeah, this is a real conundrum. So the April Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, also known as JOLTS, showed that there were 9.3 million job openings in April. That's a record number. And that 4 million people, about 2.7% of everybody who's employed, voluntarily quit their job in April. So there are people who are looking for jobs, and there are a lot of job openings, and that is, it's a conundrum why it's not matching up a little better than it should be.
Why do you think it's not?
I think there are a number of reasons. First, I think that not everywhere is opening up as fully as we are here in the state of Illinois and in Chicago. There are a lot of places where there's still some restrictions on things. Schools, which are just getting out for the year. In other places around the country, we're seeing the end of school. Some schools never went back full. So there are parents who are still open. We also have people who are not yet vaccinated, which is sort of interesting. There's lots of vaccines available now, but some people haven't gotten them or were too sick or didn't want to, didn't believe in it. Lots of reasons why people haven't yet been vaccinated, and I think they've been a little hesitant to get back out there. So there's just a bit of a mismatch.
I wonder if this is part of it, too. Say in a two-income household, and you are reduced to one or one and a half incomes. I wonder if people over the course of a year learn that they can live like that and may prefer to live that way. So it's not everybody's lazy or everybody's just taking the money and won't go back to work. It may be that people have figured out a different way to live.
Well, I think that's an excellent point. And there are a lot of people, if you just look at the savings rate, a lot of people who chose not to spend this past year. They paid down debt, also known as deleveraging. They, you know, maybe sold their home or they bought a house and now they're locking in at an extra low interest rate. And then there's also other people who are looking at the amount of money they're being offered and thinking, I can just make that balance work. Not working as much or taking a job or waiting for a job that's going to pay a little more. The Washington Post ran a story this week, over the weekend, I think, about employers who raised their wages to $15 an hour weren't having any trouble finding applicants.
Well, that's interesting. Although I wonder, too, if people who are on the sidelines or are doing what I just suggested, learning to live with less, are worried about inflation and that is going to eat at whatever economy they've created.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. That is I heard Steve Alexander talking about that during the news. And inflation is interesting. So the numbers, the top line numbers were really sort of scary. Wow, inflation up 5% from a year ago. The problem is that a year ago, we were in the depths of what was going on with COVID. Nobody knew anything. We didn't have vaccines. The stock market was falling from the sky, and people were very, very nervous. Well, we're up a lot from back then. But if you look to where we were in 2019, it looks like we're more up about 2.5%, which is higher than maybe the Fed's target, but it's certainly a lot better than saying we're up 5 or 6% from a year ago. So I wonder how much inflation is really packing it in. Now, also, I should point out that there are certain things that are pushing inflation higher, like the cost of buying a car is up dramatically, cost of buying a house is up dramatically, and these things may also be causing other things to look like they're higher priced, but maybe aren't as high as we imagine.
I mean, that's a real interesting point. I have to pause here. Maybe on my Monday through Friday 9 to noon show, I'll just ask the question, based on this fact, 4 million people voluntarily quit their jobs in April. 4 million people quit. And maybe 3.5 million of them got other jobs to go to, but it doesn't sound like that. My question would be, why did you quit and how are you going to get along? I want to talk to you about some other things, too. Elise, stay right there. Elise Glink, the real estate and financial wellness expert, owner of Think Glink. You can visit her at thinkglink.com. Let me just throw a couple of other numbers at you, Elise. We mentioned 9.3 million job openings in April. We mentioned how many people did we say quit their jobs in the month? 4 million.
4 million.
Inflation is 2.5%. And consumer spending, compared to, we're up 2.5% from 2019. And consumer spending is up 20%. Over 2019. So that's the non-pandemic year, right?
That is correct. These are really big numbers. So I think this was Bank of America. The CEO said in a call that transaction volumes on customers' credit and debit cards over the Zelle payment network, both of those are separate things, credit and debit cards and over Zelle, have grown by 20% compared to 2019. And all of the spending categories have recovered, he said, except for travel, which is still 15% lower than in 2019. And I thought that was interesting, too, given that Homeland Security said that over the weekend they screened something like 2 million passengers at airports.
Yeah, I'll bet the second half of the year is going to look a lot different than the first half. But yep. You also need to... I think we're waiting for business travel to pick up, too.
Business travel and also cruises. So the first cruise ships went out. They were fully vaccinated, meaning you had to prove that you were vaccinated. And over the weekend, it was reported that one of those cruise ships actually had two people who tested positive for COVID while they were on best laid plans, right?
Well, but I don't know. Maybe how many people on that ship? 2,000,
so gotta be.
1 in 1,000, maybe that's one. That's instructive, perhaps, Elise, that if we are going to go about, get used to that. Every now and then, someone's going to get the flu or they're going to get the COVID. If you've been vaccinated, blah, blah, blah. So don't panic when you hear these occasional stories is maybe what I'm suggesting.
Yeah, I mean, the vaccines are supposed, I'm not a doctor, but, you know, my understanding is the vaccines are supposed to keep you from dying and having to go into the hospital. So I know two people who've been fully vaccinated. They were well past their second vaccine. They both got COVID. One of them got pretty sick. He said it was kind of like having a bad flu, didn't need to go to the hospital, recovered in about 3 or 4 days. And the other one barely had a cough. It was, you know, nothing, not any of those horrible things. So we don't know how sick those people were. Were on, you know, the cruise ship, but instructive. And meanwhile, other people are signing up for cruises. We're seeing cruise ships report that bookings are very strong, mm-hmm. to your point, for the second half of the year.
Peter Greenberg, the travel editor, the host of Eye on Travel here at WGN Radio over the weekend, was in Barbados on the first North American ship of Americans traveling since 2019. I mean, that was a big deal that ship pulled into port in Barbados and had a lovely conversation there, et cetera. You know, and you're right. Dr. Kevin Most has said that many times. He said, in a way, we don't care if you have COVID-19. What we care about is, do you get sick from COVID-19? And the vaccine keeps you generally from getting sick. By the way, Elise, about the $15 an hour or less, 815 said people do not want slave wage jobs. And John is a baby boomer about to retire in 11 months. Are baby boomers retiring? That might be part of the people quitting their jobs, quote unquote. I don't know if retiring and quitting fall into the same slot or not.
They typically don't. So when you're retiring, what that does is it shrinks the number of people who are available to find jobs. So it shrinks the percentage of employed people. And we're seeing that at a pretty low number anyway. It hasn't quite bumped up. But when you say that you're actually quitting, you're looking for a new job. You just haven't found it yet.
Talk to me about real estate and interest rates and what you're seeing and hearing out there lately.
Oh, my goodness. Well, things are on fire here in the Chicago metropolitan area. We are seeing almost no homes for sale, relatively speaking. So we do have some reports that some of the inventory numbers are going up a little, but the number of days on market is lower. Interest rates look like they're dropping again. And right now they're near at historic lows. So we're talking under 3% for a 30-year mortgage, conventional financing, which is under like $540,000, I think. So if you're buying, this is, you know, these are really low interest rates. The problem is you pay a little bit more because home prices are going up. And they're finally going up in the Chicago area at a very decent rate. I think something like 7 or 8%, which sounds very high for real estate. But remember, much of Chicago's been in kind of the price appreciation doldrums over the last 14, 15 years.
Yeah, 14, 15 years, right. Do you have a ballpark number for me, days on market before homes get sold?
Well, it really varies, right? So I think the average is now about a month, month and a half for Chicago. In other places, and certainly in some neighborhoods, properties aren't even making it on the market officially. They're sold off market, private listings, sometimes known as pocket listings, where the agent takes the listing and then sells them right away to somebody in their own office or to their own buyer. And these things don't even officially get listed. So we are seeing multiple bids on about more than 50% of properties are now getting multiple bid offers. So that indicates just how hot things are.
If you're a real estate agent, God bless you, but maybe you don't have to work as hard to sell a house and collect a 5-6% commission as you used to, which leads maybe to this. Somebody told me recently that they're seeing a lot of homes for sale, FSBOs, by owners on Facebook. They're saying, hey, we got a house and it's out here in Joliet or it's, you know, in Northbrook or wherever you are, and we're just selling it. And they're just skipping that whole part of the process.
Well, it's a big saving. So if you're ever going to try to be a FSBO, a for sale by owner, this is the time to try. I would let it go maybe 3 weeks if you don't have a whole bevy of offers. You've either priced it wrong or the condition looks wrong. But certainly, there's no problem in trying. And yes, I've seen some of those Facebook postings, and I know people who have sold homes that way and sold them on their own and very, very quickly. There are some legal things you're going to need to do. So you may, in the Chicago area, want to talk to a lawyer, real estate lawyer, to help you walk through the process. You'll need a title company and some closing things. But yes, it is totally doable, and I encourage people to try. As for being a real estate agent right now, boy, everybody looked at this market and said, I want to be a real estate agent too. Look at those commissions they're collecting. Yeah. And so what you've seen is a record number of people join the National Association of Realtors. Unfortunately, they're fighting over very few listings right now. So I don't know if I would say it's easy to be an agent.
Yeah, I take your point. Elise Glink knows a little bit about this. In fact, she's the author of 100 Questions Every First-Time Home Buyer Should Ask. Visit thinkglink.com. Oh, and also, just real quick, I should have mentioned this earlier, but you've got that show with Tom Fortino from Alpha Wealth on Sundays now, right?
Yes, we do. Super excited, and we are at 6:30 a.m. I know it's a little early, but think of the great cup of coffee that you can drink while you're listening to us talk about the ins and outs of investment, retirement, taxes, all the things you need to think about when you're growing your money.
Tom knows his stuff, and Elise does too. I like the idea of those two brains chatting up our finances. That's from 6:30 to 7 on Sunday mornings, and then I guess Sinatra after that, huh?
Listen, well, you might need to calm down and hear a little bit of Old Blue Eyes when you're done thinking about all the money you have.
So this Sunday, huh, Elise?
Yeah, this is show number 3 this week.
We will be listening. Shame on me for not mentioning that earlier, and thanks for your time today.
It's a pleasure, John. Be well.
I see Elise Glink. Jim Dahlke's here, senior editor at Chicago Inno. Let's talk about, I don't know how to pronounce the name of this scooter that is launched in Chicago, UNAGI. Is that Unagi?
That's right. Unagi Scooters, California scooter brand, coming live here in Chicago. And, you know, they're taking actually a really interesting business approach here, kind of different than the Bird or Lime, where you sort of rent it by the minute and unlock it on the street. What Unagi is doing is actually allowing you to rent by the month or even by the year, and they send it to you in the mail. So a really interesting new scooter approach here in Chicago.
Rented by the month. So how are people using them now? By the ride, right? You just need one. You take it here to there. This, I would have it and keep it for maybe a month or more, huh?
That's exactly right. So what they're really going for is that, you know, very avid regular scooter user. So this isn't just the occasional weekend rider. This is somebody who really is kind of incorporating a scooter into their daily commute. You know, I think something that we were starting to see pre-pandemic as scooters became really popular, you know, in Chicago and in cities across the country is, you know, people were really using the scooter as sort of that last mile transit option, whether it's, you know, the, hey, I got off the train and still have about a half a mile to go to get to my apartment, or, you know, get off the train to get to work and still have a little bit more to go. And what I think, you know, we saw obviously during the pandemic is that a lot of that commuting time really wasn't needed. But now as people get back to the office, I think Unagi sees an opportunity to kind of capture those commuters again.
So I'm kind of leasing one, it sounds like. I don't own it. I'm paying $50 a month, something like that.
That's right. And it's more affordable, say, than, you know, purchasing one outright, which can go for, you know, $1,000 or more. So if you want to do the leasing option, save a few bucks. It's definitely, you know, more affordable on that end. And it's going to save you a couple bucks, too, versus using a Bird or a Lime every single day. So if you are a regular scooter user, it could be an option for you.
Now, I read in your I think it was Catherine Davis's story that you guys, that this company's based in Oakland, but that they do have these scooters in the suburbs of Chicago already, Joliet, Aurora, Elgin, places like that.
Yeah, and that's really interesting because you're not seeing a ton of scooter activity make its way out to the burbs so far. So Unagi is definitely kind of seeing an opportunity to get into places like Aurora and Joliet and Arlington Heights, Cicero. So it's really an interesting approach from them because you're not seeing a ton of scooters, Birds or Limes out in the burbs just yet. So yeah, they see a value not just in the business district, not just in Chicago, but also in the suburbs.
There's a new protein bar on the scene. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so actually the founder of Protein Bar, Matt Matros, a well-known cereal entrepreneur in Chicago, sold Protein Bar to private equity back in 2013. And his most recent business, Limitless, which was a coffee brand, it sold to Keurig Dr. Pepper just last year. And actually, Matt is back with a new business. His new startup is called ShopFlix, which is aiming to be sort of a 24/7 video streaming network for brands to tell their stories and for shoppers to see high quality demos of products they might want to buy. It's a little bit of QVC meets Peloton meets Netflix, the Matros sort of explained to me, QVC being this, you know, rich demonstration shopping video platform and Peloton being sort of following the hosts of the programs you like the most and kind of tuning in when they're going live, and Netflix for the catalog of content. But really what they're doing is creating, you know, a business storytelling platform and really kind of a TV network, not unlike sort of HGTV or the Food Network where, you know, the content sort of comes first and commerce second. But that really is ultimately the goal, is to find kind of new ways to introduce products to shoppers.
Still, it's commercials. This is commercials we're watching, right?
That's right. We're watching commercials. But what they've done is hired a bunch of Hollywood writers and to kind of create these scripts, and they've got the in-house production, video production team. And so, yeah, I mean, what they're trying to do is a bit of storytelling. But, yeah, at the end of the day, we're selling products here. And Yeti and KitchenAid are a couple of early brands that have gotten on the platform here. But really kind of what this startup saw was, kind of a lack of context with, you know, Facebook and Instagram ads. Everything sort of gets lost in the shuffle there. Everything sort of looks the same on Amazon, and, you know, they wanted to create another avenue, another way for shoppers to kind of interact with brands and to give brands a little bit more, you know, breadth to tell their story.
Well, you might expect I would say this, but I think commercials done properly are information. It's helpful. You know, some commercials are annoying. Some commercials you're not interested in, but if it's a product or service that has a market, telling people about that shouldn't be so painful. So I'm not going to just dismiss this idea out of hand. I'm kind of curious what that will look like.
Yeah, and Matt has brought on one of the early employees from Trunk Club onto the group as well, Lindsay Kilbride. And they've raised about $1.7 million from some local Chicago VC folks in town. And so definitely some interesting momentum for ShopFlix. They're going to be one to watch.
And the name of this network, if you will, is called?
ShopFlix.
ShopFlix. Chris Bryant's on your website. What's the story here?
Yeah, so the Cub Slugger is one of the new investors actually in a Miami startup that's helping you sleep better. The startup is called 8Sleep, founded back in 2014. They create a high-tech mattress that can regulate your temperature and give you data about how well you slept. And they've raised quite a bit of funding and announced a most recent round just last week from some high-profile folks. So Chris Bryant was among the investors, Alex Rodriguez, Kevin Hart, some other well-known business folks are in that company as well. But yeah, they sell a $3,000 high-tech mattress as well as a $1,700 mattress cover, which is full of all bunch of high-tech features.
And what is the name of this product again?
This is 8Sleep.
8Sleep. You know, it's funny, but my son and daughter-in-law have our first grandbaby. And Bernadette will sometimes, I'm not sure what all the, a lot of technology in this baby's world. And they will know how often she tossed and turned and the monitors and the things that they're monitoring. And the baby's healthy and well. There's nothing extraordinary about her condition that she'd need all of this. But it's interesting. They'll know how long she slept before she woke up and then nodded off and then went back to sleep again. I suppose there are things that monitor the baby's temperature and stuff like that, too. If I guess adults should not be denied the same technology, huh?
Yeah, that's right. I can totally vouch for that. We had our first last summer as well. So I definitely know that there are plenty of high-tech gadgets out there to monitor your little one closer than ever.
It's a little perplexing to the grandparents, I must tell you, but that's a show for a different day. Well, it's nice to talk to you. Thanks for all the info, Jim.
Thanks, John.
Jim Dahlke, senior editor at Chicago Inno. The business news continues on the Wintrust Business Lunch. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A mall owner with holdings in the Chicago area has filed for bankruptcy protection. The real estate investment trust, Washington Prime, operates enclosed malls and strip malls across the country. The company owns Lincolnwood Town Center, which is in foreclosure. The company also has properties in Waukegan, Orland Park, and Countryside. Washington Prime says the COVID-19 pandemic drove away shoppers. O'Hare Airport is not doing as well as some of the nation's other airports in rebounding from the pandemic. Capacity at O'Hare is still about 20% below the same month in 2019, according to data from an aviation research firm. Domestic leisure travel has overtaken business and international flights. Denver International Airport is back to pre-pandemic capacity. Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport is down just 1%, and Houston's George Bush Intercontinental Airport is down 7%. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of food, and there's Steve Alexander.
Here I am, lunchtime for a lot of us. Are you a member of the Clean Plate Club, John, or do you often leave some stuff behind?
I eat pretty good. I think it's pretty clean. Why do you ask?
Well, most of us are wasters. The USDA says on average we waste about a pound of food a day per person. And if you're concerned about food waste, there's an app for that now.
Which is a USDA app that provides guidance on safe handling, preparation, and storage of more than 650 food and beverage items.
That's Jean Busby, who works at the USDA and spends her days keeping an eye on food waste and loss.
The FoodKeeper app, not only does it have a safety component, it really can help reduce food loss and waste because it helps people understand how long they can store different kinds of food products. With this app, you can track storage times for different foods, learn cooking tips, and get safety recall alerts.
And if this is your thing and you're really into it?
Users can set up calendar reminders for when products are nearing their recommended storage date.
You can download the app at your app store or go to foodsafety.gov, which is where you can also see all of the latest recalls from the USDA. Badly needed and beneficial rain fell across parts of the corn and soybean belts over the weekend. There are still some areas, though, that are bone dry and, as usual, some areas that have had too much water. Massive flooding across Arkansas and Mississippi over the weekend. And with crops looking better than they have, than they did a few days ago, prices at the Chicago Board of Trade are lower today. Beans are down 36 cents. Corn is down about 27.5 cents at $6.57 a bushel. And July wheat is down about 7 cents at $6.73. Beans were at $14.72. Today's Farm to Your Belly feature, it is National Bourbon Day, and credit, or blame, depending on which side of the temperance fence you're on, goes to corn farmers of the Midwest, because to be called bourbon, it must be distilled from a mash containing at least 51% corn. It is also National Strawberry Shortcake Day. Nothing better on a summer eve, right? Extra whipped cream for me, please. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us on Mondays. One way, I guess, to measure the airline industry is to count passengers at the airports, and that's what they do, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the TSA said they screened nearly 2.1 million people on Sunday, which is the most since March 7th of 2020. So that's a big number. Not that long ago, you and I were talking about when they hit that 1 million passenger milestone, but 2 million, and also another 2 million also on Friday. So that's about 74% of the number that passed through TSA airport checkpoints compared with 2 years earlier. That's a big jump. Not that long ago, you and I were talking about much, much lower numbers. So to see this big jump, that is, you know, really, I'm sure, a very hopeful number to a lot of airline carriers. Of course, United, based here in Chicago, we keep tabs on just because they're here in our backyard. And all the leadership of the airlines have really been saying it, so much is going to depend on that summer travel rebound, and to see passenger confidence and their willingness to get back on a plane, that kind of thing. Of course, as Steve Grzanich was mentioning a little bit earlier, O'Hare is recovering a little slower than some other mid-continent airports. We think about the airports that you will generally stop at for a layover if you're flying cross-country. That's Denver, that's Houston, that's DFW, and of course, that's O'Hare. O'Hare's dependence on business and international travel is so very high. We are still seeing, you know, some good numbers at O'Hare, bolstered by leisure travel. But until we see that rebound in international and business, still a little bit of a struggle for O'Hare.
Best day since March 7th, 2020. Boy, and then it just fell off a cliff, didn't it?
Yeah, it really, really did. CNBC and some other news organizations ran this graph that TSA shared this data when they released this information. And you can look at it from January 2020 to, you know, to now here, the midpoint through June. And you see this line, this number just take a nosedive between March and April. Early in March, it really just starts to crash, and it really bottoms out there in April and May. Starts to kind of tick up a little bit in the summer of June 2020. I mean, it's really, really interesting to compare those years and look at exactly the story that passenger traffic and passengers moving through airports told throughout the pandemic.
I have no segue for this. What's new with Girl Scout? What's new with Girl Scout cookies?
I know, there is no segue. Well, here's the thing. So Girl Scouts have millions of unsold cookies. To be clear, they have 15 million boxes of unsold cookies. Now, I should say, no Girl Scouts rang my doorbell, so yeah. I'm good for some of those. But this year, you know, we didn't see people often, parents take the list to work and say, hey, sign up, my kid's selling these cookies. You see, you know, Girl Scouts going door to door, going to civic groups, things like that. Because we were not doing that kind of thing, because we weren't, you know, sending our kids to camp and stuff like that, Girl Scouts normally sell about 200 million boxes of cookies a year, and that number is just not hitting so much. This is a 109-year-old organization, and they've said this is kind of an unprecedented thing. They've never really seen this kind of not like lack of demand, really. They've never seen the opposite of a cookie shortage. If anything, we kind of sell out of Thin Mints or, you know, sell out of some of those favorites, but they have all these unsold boxes. So everybody should find a Girl Scout that they know.
That's funny you mention that, because I'm a sucker for those. I'll always sign up the list to work, and if I see them in front of the Jewel, sometimes I'll buy some. I don't recall the last opportunity I had to buy Girl Scout cookies.
I know. And that's the thing. You know, when we think about those opportunities where I'm with you. I usually saw Girl Scouts outside of the grocery store and would stop there and talk with them. And I was a Girl Scout, so I always, you know, would chat with them about what's changed over the years being a Girl Scout. But so what Girl Scouts is recommending is that people go online. You can buy through their online program, And it's called Hometown Heroes Program. So you can go through there. You can order cookies. It also distributes cookies to healthcare workers, firefighters, and others. So you can do that. You can make sure that some frontline workers that have been working so hard the last, 14 months, they get a little treat in their day. So I have faith that these cookies will be claimed and will be sold, but it's going to take a little effort. People will have to do it a little bit differently this year.
Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Good news. Okay, Amy, we'll visit down the road.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Later this week.